Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Ladies and gentlemen, stop your automobiles, pull to the side of the road, and get it all hooked up right with your iPhone. It's another episode of This Life with Dr. Drew and Bob.
And our special guest, Jay Moore. This is your second go-round here, isn't it?
Yeah. This is my second time, so yeah. This is good.
Here you are.
Welcome back.
Post-holiday blues?
No. I get just straight-up holiday blues. Like Christmas Eve to about December 29th. It's tough to get out of the bed.
Before the mics turned on here, you started asking questions, and I said, we'll save that for Jay. What the hell were we talking about?
Oh, the coddling of college students.
Yes, yes.
It's ridiculous. I've been reading this book called Coddling by these two.
Coddling of the American Mind.
Coddling of the American Mind. Apparently, they have a podcast. Drew knows everything about them. Of course, I come over. I've read a new book over the holidays. I'm excited about it. Drew's read it. He knows the podcast people.
The Book of Matthew. Have you heard of it? I'm going to write this down.
But they
talk about these lies that we're telling children and now multi-generations of children that what doesn't kill you makes you weaker, to trust your feelings at
all
times,
above all else,
and that life is simply good people versus evil people. And so when you tell children
One way to frame it.
Yeah, good versus to instill your feelings.
What?
What's wrong with trusting your feelings?
Nothing wrong with trusting your feelings.
Or how about your instincts?
But your
instincts or intuitions are different than feelings are caused by trauma and loss and grief.
Correct. You have to look at your feelings. Your feelings are valid, but you can't necessarily trust them to interpret reality at all times.
I use them to know what situation I'm in.
Yeah.
So if I'm angry, it's someone who has a strong will too and can't be manipulated. Right, so
if you feel angry,
yeah, if I feel angry and tense or frustrated,
yes, you read your
because
emotions.
Because I'm in an environment where you can't manipulate, you can't do my regular MO, right? And so I need to rise up and be an adult and have a conversation,
right?
And
so your
talk
feelings,
about that,
so your feelings inform you,
yes, inform you,
yeah, they're informative and you can evaluate,
they're often
them.
Not valid.
Well, they're always valid,
they're always valid, but I always say, like. Nobody can argue with your feelings, and when they do, it's maybe time for divorce. But you can choose.
You learned that one the hard way?
Yes, I did.
Did you?
But I know my value, the depth of my effort, because I drank from the well beneath the well for a long time. I gave it everything I had, no regrets. But it's like you can't choose your feelings, but you can choose which feelings to examine, which ones to let in, you know, because you're right. Like people that I work with, like you and I are in the same program that ends in an A and has nothing to do with eating.
Or emotions.
But it's that emotion that you feel, that like that anger or something, it's usually something I see that I don't like about myself in the person. Like,
right.
If you're in an argument as an adult, you failed.
Well, but so trusting your feelings, yes, you can trust them, but you better understand what they mean. So if you, like, every
understand.
Time you see a blonde woman, she makes you feel horrible. It's like, that's something that's in you. That's something to understand.
I feel the opposite. I feel the other way about it. I feel like predator prey. Like, I'm going to run that gazelle to ground.
Well,
do all your guests sit in this corner like Edith Ann? Yeah. Right? Leave it to Jay Moore to have the Edith Ann reference. You know? I got to sit in here and say, oh, crisscross applesauce. I don't want to offend anybody.
Jay is the best reference. In Girl's podcast, he brought up Cy Twolamy one day. And I'm like, how did you get there?
It was my favorite artist.
Cy, yeah.
And I was like, wow, how'd you get to that?
Basquiat, big influence on Basquiat.
Yeah, I like Basquiat also.
Right.
I didn't want to go with M.C. Escher.
Did Adam know who Cy Twolamy
was? No. I had to look it up.
Oh, I was coked out of my mind and went to the Philadelphia Museum to see his show.
That's great. Yeah, Basquiat's?
Yeah. No, Cy.
Oh, I think Basquiat would be more fun, those charcoals would talk to you when you're railed out.
Yeah.
But you guys are also big... Bukowski fans too.
Yeah,
right?
Oh yeah.
You know what a shithead he was, right?
Yes,
I knew him.
But he was a colossal shithead.
Well, let's talk.
But that's what you expected.
What?
That's what you expected. I tell the best story. I worked on Barfly. I worked on the movie Barfly.
Where Mickey worked as a Snagglepuss impression. Exit stage left, even to all my friends.
How about Frank Stallone? Is excellent in that movie.
Right. That's good.
They get in the big fight. So Bukowski would come to the set a lot of nights. My job, I was a set dresser, but my job when he was there.
Which life was this? Jesus, another life.
A junky 80s life.
Oh, my God.
So was to take care of him and like serve him at the bar. A lot of the scenes were shot at that bar that most of the movie is shot in. And we used that as a home base. And so Bukowski would just sit there and drink. And so I would tell my friends, Bukowski's down here. It'd be like 2 o'clock in the morning. And so Flea came down one time and he said, "So Flea, what do you like to do?" And he goes, "Well, I love basketball and music." And he goes, "Basketball. Bunch of Neanderthals running around in their underwear trying to shove a ball down inside a basket. Sounds interesting."
Meanwhile, he shit his pants at a horse track. he's better than everybody.
That's what I was thinking. Like, you go to the horse track every day and watch horses run around.
Come on, seven.
Oh, no.
So here's Bob now telling me he served drinks to Bukowski. One day we were sitting here talking, and I go, "You know, I love Simone de Beauvoir." He goes, "Oh, yeah.
I had lunch with her.
I knew her." I'm like, "What?
I worked in movies."
Yeah?
Right.
So like Richard Dreyfuss.
I worked in movies, okay?
No, I was
not a moon burn.
I was a little moviegoer guy.
But Bukowski's the first guy's voice that I heard where I'm like, "Oh, no, I don't want to hear you read Bluebird with that," because he had that real high, twangy voice. Drunk. And when you read it, it just seems with such gravitas. Like Post Office was my first Bukowski book, and Hamlin Rye, I do want to circle back to the Coddling of the American Mind. And hearing him read something, I was like, "Oh, like Burroughs sounds exactly how I pictured Burroughs would sound."
Can you imagine Bukowski alive now writing those books in the Me Too era?
Oh, that's my point.
What would happen?
I was aware that was a problem back then. But let me just say, the book Women
couldn't come out now. No one would publish it.
Well, I don't understand why we don't posthumously condemn people for their bullshit. Just call me crazy, but
Led Zeppelin and Charles Bukowski
and Picasso. How about we just examine those guys realistically?
Charlie Chaplin on that list.
Let's keep kicking the shit out of dead people.
But
don't get me started on Goebbels. You know?
I was thinking about Bukowski recently because the movie Beautiful Boy came out. This was David Sheff's book. You know David Sheff. And have you seen this yet or read that book? It's about a dad dealing with his
son. It was not a popular book in the super secret society that we're in.
Oh, you didn't like it?
It was not.
Because?
It's codependency.
Oh, my God. When you see the movie, the codependency, it's so much worse.
It's worse than the drug addiction.
Oh, my God. I was like, I had no idea he was that ill.
Were you lucky enough to have somebody codependent with you in your life when you were back then?
No, not really.
Isn't that sad? Don't you wish you could find a dad like that?
I wish I'd find a daddy now. I could marry Tim Gunn. I could gaslight that old man. I'd have so many mountain bikes and dune buggies. Just be like, "Drink your milk, Papa. Time for bed, Daddy. Go to bed."
Where'd you grow up?
Verona, New Jersey.
Dune buggies in New Jersey.
Well, we didn't dune buggies. We had a lot of like
you had ATCs.
We had the bikes we made from
mini
like,
bikes,
lawnmower engines. Yeah.
Bull tacos.
No brakes.
Bull taco.
Yeah, they had no brakes.
Remember the bull taco?
No brakes. My shoes were worn out. My left shoe.
That's true.
Oh my God!
So the Coddling of the American Mind. What were the tenets again?
The three things that children are being taught that was the opposite of what we were told. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. What doesn't kill you makes you weaker.
So avoid,
you avoid
love
all.
Love doesn't kill you.
It hurts for
this
a long
already,
time.
Go ahead, wherever you want to go with it.
No, I'm good at spotting countershading. You know, in nature, a fish is dark on top, light on the bottom. The only time we see a fish is when it turns and gives up that like countershading. So I just see that like conversationally, like a code breaker. Not really a code breaker. I'm just like,
I just think the American society is a ruthless dog eat dog society. And if you're not going to prepare, when do you prepare your children or young adults to realize and swim in that ocean? And I don't think we're doing a very good job. The last two generations were not doing a very good job of preparing young people for living in the real world. Mm. And now they're lashing out at us in all these different ways, in academia, where they're going to remove history from because it triggers the students.
Yeah, we can't talk
hearing
about war.
Slavery
triggers
the patient.
Being triggered is a good thing.
Listen, I called the students the patients just now.
It's not PC to say what doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
It's not. Forget not PC.
They're saying it's a reverse.
It's not being not being sort of presented to young people. The opposite is being presented.
My mom used to say, "You'll die of something else."
Right. Same thing.
Over and over.
I like that.
You'll die of something else. I like that. I did something with Elvis. Elvis was out of school, Drew, for 25 days.
Presley?
No, my son. He's 8 years old.
Kind of
that's
off
way too long to be home from school. So he was whining and complaining and frustrated and crying. And I said, "Go in your room and cry. I just can't listen to it anymore." You should have seen the look in his face. like I had abandoned him and abused. And I just remember my dad saying, if you're going to cry like that, go in your room. I was just trying to repeat.
I think that's fair. Like, I've done that.
You've done it to your kids?
I have a thing with my 7-year-old. I go, can you hear me? I just need him to nod when he's like really crying.
Yeah.
And I'll say, can you hear me? And if he nods, I'll just say, do you need to be small? And that's our code for like, I don't even know why I'm crying. I'm just freaking out.
Yeah.
And if he nods yes again, then I just go, poor guy. I kiss his head. I hold him. I put him in bed. We'll read something.
After that,
instead of like, what is it? What is it? What is it? What
after
is it?
That doesn't work. When it's something that they want and they can't have, and that's why they're crying.
Oh, that doesn't happen in my house.
Oh, no. I wouldn't. No. You're some Zen Buddhist
Both my sons responded very well to logic.
You spend golly, not Buddhist.
It's like, remember I promised you X? Well, Y happened, and then W happened, and I can't deliver X. And they go,
right.
Okay. They just deliver. They
what
just,
kind of kids are those?
They just do well with logic. I think it's the only time I'm not like this creative piece of spin art in front of them.
How old are you? 7 and
16 and 7.
Oh, so that's they're older than your kids, way older.
Yeah.
But it was
16.
Like that their whole life. Yeah. So what doesn't kill you makes you weaker.
So
right?
You got to avoid it as opposed to what we do in real life when somebody has a phobia or an OCD, you do something called exposure therapy. You expose them to it and they learn to manage it.
Toughen up.
So can I still say life's a bitch and then you die?
Well, I mean, that's a pessimistic attitude.
That's nihilistic. That's different.
Kids love that one, though.
I have a spin on that. I say life is not fair, but it is fantastic.
Hmm. Oh, there
you
go.
I'd rather you say that.
Okay, you learned that in the Secret Society.
No, I didn't, man.
Where'd you make that up then?
I don't know. I coached high schoolers. I got to speak in bumper sticker form or they tune me out.
What do you coach?
I coach wrestling at Palisades High.
Oh, my God. That's awesome.
Yeah.
You wait for the other guy to do something, he will.
Simple, same.
Everything doesn't work itself out. Good habits get good habits. Like, you just got to speak in these weird
little
bumper
stickers. That sounds like John Wooden or something.
Big influence.
Yeah, really?
You haven't coached it until they've learned it.
I heard a
changed my life.
You haven't coached it. Do you hear that, John Wooden?
You haven't coached
it. You know the thing about John Wooden?
I'm like, why don't they shoot? I've coached them how to. Oh, I haven't. Because they haven't learned it yet. They just pulled the trigger. So what didn't kill you makes you weaker. What are the other two?
Wait, real quick, though, the coaching thing.
Oh,
this is
supposed to be real quick.
But I just heard it. We'll get to it. But I just heard it.
Trust your feelings.
I lost
he likes
my
to
thought.
Interact.
Trust your feelings. And then third.
I like that one.
Trust your feelings. The third one is life is simply divided between good people and evil people.
That's just
and
a
usually,
combative way to
usually the individual is the good one and everyone else is the evil one.
What
is
the assumption always, that the person listening is the good person?
Right.
Why do we always say what do we always say about severe personality disorders like borderline personality disorder? How do they think about people?
Watch out is what I say.
No. Not you watch out for them. I mean, how
dumb crazy people.
How do they think about the world? How does a borderline think about the world?
Everyone's against them.
All good or all bad? All black, all white, no gray. So pathology.
So are you saying America has become a borderline personality?
I think we've developed a narcissistic personality style.
Nice.
And that style, narcissists always think in very extremes, like all this way, all that way. And I'm wondering if it's more – I'm actually beginning to think it may be more histrionic than anything else. But even histrionics also, it's all good.
You know
what? Bad.
One of my favorite things the last year, I've really calmed down, and you've noticed it on social media. Well, my friends, most of my friends and most of your friends are all anti-Trump. We live in Southern California. It's Trump, and people text me, Trump, did you hear what he said today? Bob, Trump.
Right.
And I've been saying, why does it upset you so much to them? And they look at me like the enemy.
Yeah.
Right.
Like somehow they thought I was a good guy. On the side of good, and now I've just thrown this question at them. Why are you so upset about this?
What do they say?
They get angry at me.
No reaction, no response.
They haven't examined their feelings.
Yeah. And I'm
super. How do you deal with it?
I'm super moderate, and so people accuse me of not picking sides. Got to pick a side. One person told me, we got to go out and kill Nazis. I'm like,
kill
Nazis? What country do I live in?
What are you going to raves?
I'm just a friend. And I was like, what?
Where are the Nazis?
He goes, we should go find them and kill them. We should go find
them.
Argentina.
Drinking heavily.
Tomato, tomato.
And I was like, what world do I live in? I lived in a world where Nazis are given their opportunity to go hang themselves. Go say everything you want. Be an idiot and get ostracized. And you'll end up in prison doing something stupid. Good. Goodbye.
So who are good guys and who are bad guys? That's
good.
The question.
Nazis are bad guys. We just pencil them in.
Everybody's bad. Yeah, everyone. The way people who think in black and white like that, everyone's who bad who impinges on me in any way
and
other than a positive way. That's negative, evil person immediately. That's how that
works. One of the examples they give is Columbia University in 2013 changed their history, the way history is presented, because the story of slavery was triggering some of the...
You can't omit slavery from a history. So
you
how
can
do you
soften
it?
It and you cannot make it such a focus or show the pictures.
Yeah, that's bad. That's
academia
not
is doing this, though. Drew's been talking about it. Now I'm reading a book that correlates what he's
what
observing.
What I think is that the... The predominant administrative...
They call it triggering.
That's been... Listen, I've been unable to speak. You can't speak in college campuses, can you, anymore? Do you go
no.
do it? Yeah, because they are all triggered. You have to submit a list of potentially triggering topics you're going
to
cover.
I hosted the NASCAR Awards, Drew. 8 times.
That's good.
Don't say this within 3 paragraphs of that. It's like, all right, just... They got the check, though, so you do whatever they want.
Well, but in college
campuses are absurd. The last one I did was probably 20 years ago, and I got into it with a lady that paid me at dinner.
Before or after?
After. She had. I was Nick Swartzen opened for me. I was at Cal. And they're so far left that they're right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they're so far left.
They come around the other side.
The prism is so fucking clouded. She goes, I go, you don't look particularly pleased. It was a great show. And she goes, well, it seemed just kind of racist. I go, excuse me? It's kind of my tribe, you know? I'm in show business. And she goes, well, like when you told the story of the kid outside the grocery store, I go, yeah. She goes, why do you have to make him black? I go, because he was black. You know, the kid that sells chocolates outside the grocery store, like help my high school
athletic department
get new stuff, you know. And the joke's like, oh, that's how we're solving interscholastic athletics? One chocolate bar with Wu-Tang and Cleopatra on the side? Like, I know every chocolate ever invented. These are all soupy and weird. And she goes, but why'd you have to make him black? I go, because he was black. She goes, but if he was white, you wouldn't have made him white. I said, well, 12% of the population is black. I'm white. I live around white people. So any black person's an interloper in my reality. People get stared at the grocery store when they're black, not because we think they're going to steal, because, well, there's a black guy I saw today.
But
it's
here's
the first guy I saw all day that was black.
Here's when
if
you're
a,
dealing
a black
with...
guys are on the porch in South Central and a white guy jogging
yes,
down the street.
Yes, that's what I was going to say.
Go, remember that day that white guy jogged down the street past Watts Tower?
Because I was always that white guy.
Right, me too.
Down there trying to score drugs.
Me well, yeah.
I like the racist statement now. See,
that was. See, I just said a racist thing.
It's not a racist
statement. You only get drugs in black areas.
It's a logistically, geographically accurate account of his personal history.
Yeah.
Dot. The end.
It's crazy.
It's what happened. So I said that.
You got in trouble. What happened to Swartzen?
He just sat there at the end of the table. He had like some weird, like fruity drink with an umbrella. And me and this girl are going back and back. I go, well, he's the interloper. He was black. I go, I can't change his race to make you more comfortable. This is my, and we go back and forth. And finally, Nick stands up and goes, welcome to Fantasy Island. And like, nobody even really looks up. And he's just on an island at the end of the table with his cocktail over his head. He's the only one drinking. And I just said, do you have my check? And she said yes, and that was that. But yeah, they're bananas. I just did, before I came here, I recorded my podcast, More Stories, about I was defending Louis C.K. emphatically. Like, you can't, only 240 people are in that room. I played that room. It's an incredible comedy club.
We've been to that.
You talking about the cellar?
Governors in Levittown.
You were there with Artie last time.
No,
we
Governors
were
in Levittown were the last special, where the last stand-up set where people enraged because he said black – do you swear on this podcast?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where black guys have big dicks and Asian guys have little dicks and the Parkland shooting victims like, I don't have to listen to you. You're not a hero. You push some fat kid in front of a bullet.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
doesn't make you
– That's so, a Louis joke.
That ties exactly to his previous stuff.
Always.
It's the exact same frequency we celebrated 3 years ago. You changed.
Okay, so
– He didn't change.
So, okay, so hold on. I talked to my daughter about this because I was really – she's pretty thoughtful about these things.
She went to Columbia.
Yeah, she went to Columbia, so she represents that point of view. And I asked
Smarty
her, I go, but listen, I go, why?
Assume I'm always listening to you, Drew. It's all right. Okay. I am.
Well, I'm used to Bob. See,
yeah,
I
know. You speak, you're
Fair
an
enough.
Oracle in my life.
Fair
bro.
Enough.
For real.
Fair
enough. Go.
So when I asked the question, I said, Louis is still doing the things he's always done, which is asking the questions and having the thoughts that we all dare not even have. And he puts them out there and goes, but maybe, you know, he used to do that. Things
yeah,
that,
the nut thing, allergy.
Yeah, the nut allergy.
Things that,
right. We're all laughing right now, by the way.
the
right.
nut
three
allergy.
White males.
And even if we laugh because
my
it's
privilege.
Uncomfortable. But I said, I told TMZ this. They grabbed me at the airport and I said, look, we got to have somebody who can ask the questions we all, they even have the thoughts we dare not have. He's having them, and we react. Part of laughter is discomfort, right? It's the
you see my show?
Yeah.
Right, I blew Eddie Collins when I was 10. I tell him that he gets a little uncomfortable. He's now the chief of police in New Jersey. I drive as fast as I want through New Jersey.
He doesn't get as comfortable. He's more comfortable than the audience.
I'm one
by
car
the way.
Accident away from having blown the governor.
Oh, Jesus. This is good.
What do they fucking call Chief Collins?
That is amazing.
So we she said, she goes, you know what? He doesn't.
I just love the review. That is amazing.
Good for you.
Yeah. Good for you, Jay. So you know it's who you blow after all.
So she said, he's no longer granted that privilege by virtue of having shifted into being somebody other than we thought he was. And I said,
That's a bunch of hocus pocus right there.
It's okay.
Yeah, hold on. Don't tell me.
So I said, well, we need him to regain that privilege. How would he do that? Impossible. And I thought, I think that's a mistake to just sign somebody out. There needs to be a way. And in my world, the way would be to through secret societies and getting proper treatment and breaking some of the narcissist defenses down and really coming to terms with what he has been accused of and what it's done to people and being very public about that. No?
You know what he said during that show?
Yeah.
He goes, you know what? What are you going to take away my birthday? I don't give a shit. My life is over. Like, it's over. He goes, I lost $35 million. You can't tell somebody you have $35 million. You're a dick. But when you tell somebody you lost $35 million, I'm sorry, but that's fucking hilarious. That's what he said.
Were you there?
The first, it was just online, the one everybody was enraged about. And I listened to the entire 48-minute set, and I said on my podcast that I recorded today, if you're a comedian and you tell me that's not funny, you're full of fucking shit. Come on this podcast and explain to me why this isn't funny. I don't believe you. It's hilarious. That hour is hilarious.
And so, but give us your sense of the nature of funny. What is
I couldn't
funny?
Begin to explain the nature of funny.
But you just know it when you see it, kind of thing.
Yeah, like art, like you said. And it's the best art form of all the art forms because unlike a painting or a sculpture or music, it changes its size, its shape, its colors, its materials every viewing.
Well, part of, for me, comedy is an explicit truth that's like a record scratch. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
and you like, got to go deep down into that cave. Where other people aren't
correct to see
willing
that,
to go
to see it or can't, and they see it, and their your and job is
go,
to
it
show
just
it
wasn't
to
like
us.
A bunch, I'm not going to say anybody's names in the negative, but it's like people like directors, you know, I'm talking about go like it was just lazy and it's hack. Like, no, he said, yeah, he didn't just do black guys have big dicks, Asian guys have little dicks. He said a black guy's dick that he saw was so big it looked like half of it should be underground. That's fucking hilarious. I'm sorry. That is fucking brilliant. He goes, if that was mine, I would just go, are you my dick or am I your dick? And he said, Asian guys, why do they have little dicks? Because they're all women. All Asian people are women, and some of them have really big clits, and they just push it inside the vagina holes of other Asian women. I'm like, that's not exactly the worn path.
Why didn't the Asian community come after him?
Because nobody came after him. That audience is in hysterics for 48 straight minutes.
Well, they came after
200,
him.
Not nobody in the audience. For 240 people, they saw a special incandescent moment of time of great comedy. Everybody that has a problem with it, we're not in that room. That room holds 240 people. There are millions, literally millions, well over a million clicks. Hundreds of thousands of negative people throwing shit at a guy. He's wounded. Get him.
Yeah.
Because America loves an apology.
Yeah.
But we can sniff out a, I'm not so sure. Like, if I offended anyone, that's not an apology.
Yeah.
If I hit you in the face, hey, I'm really sorry I hit you. Hey, if I hit you, if that hurt, I'm sorry. No, you don't hit people. So if I offended anyone isn't really an apology.
So don't you think he should apologize?
I don't think any comedian should ever apologize. Yeah, I was angry when Bill Maher apologized for his joke. That was amazing.
Not for his jokes, but for maybe
World at a time here.
Yeah, okay.
For the jokes, no. Patrice O'Neill said it, rest in peace, Big Brother, said it perfectly. On the monkey bars, let's say there's six monkey bars. If I reach for a seventh and it's not there and I fall on my face, that's what I do. You cannot criticize me for reaching in the dark for a sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth monkey bar because if I do find them, you applaud.
Yeah.
So when I miss them and fall, you can't tell me I'm no good because I'm the only one with the balls up here reaching into the dark for an extra monkey bar.
Completely agree with that. But well, I want somebody like Louis to understand the world Kevin I live
Hart,
in.
Kevin Hart is the subject now.
It's another one. That's Why can't he get recruited?
Ellen, who stands up for him, is getting crucified by those people that view things
it's
online.
It's transference. Everybody's so – you can't do anything about a Supreme Court nominee. You can't do anything about a president of the fucking United States who said – grab him by the pussy. Like, that's what he said. We heard it with
so
our
now
ears.
We'll crucify Louis, and Kevin, just, Bill Maher.
There's one emotion you can't introduce to an athlete or an artist, and that's doubt. You may not let me feel doubt. I have broken up with girlfriends because they put doubt in my head. Like, abstinence works for me. I can't – Kobe Bryant can't feel doubt when he's jacking airball after airball when he first came into the league. Your right. greatest football players can't go out of that hole and go – eh.
I don't know.
A wrestler can't feel doubt. You just got to go. An artist can't feel doubt. And these are beautiful, brilliant artists. They're artists, these comedians.
So Kevin Hart.
This isn't some hack that just goes up and go like Jackie the Joke
Why
Man.
Why
like,
Kevin Hart?
Hey, I'll be behind the couch. Whoa, come on.
Let's dissect.
Like, these are brilliant people.
Don't follow your feelings if there's doubt.
Let's dissect.
That's
the,
correct.
Let's dissect the Kevin thing. When Kevin grew up in the hood of Philadelphia, right, where culturally – there's a lot of animus towards gay people, right? He said some jokes, I think probably post his enlightenment of how the world was and who he was. But he was still – he was reaching back into his culture for a joke, right? If his kid was said he was gay, he'd slap him or something. That was the joke, right? It was from 5 or 6 to 7 years
ago. Like, I haven't heard this. Instinctively, my visceral reaction was,
it's a bad joke.
Was no. But he's got to be able to do it.
He's got to be able to do it. I go the opposite way.
I say on stage, I wish my son was gay. If my son told me he was gay, I'd be so happy that I was his father and not some asshole in Orange County that would try to slap it out of him. But there'd be one rule in my house. And the audience thinks I'm going to say the negative thing. I go, you're going to be really gay. I want you roller skating to school in a gay flag, listening to Rufus Wainwright covered in glitter. Oh. I want other gay kids to come off the plane and go, there he is. Yes.
You want to be?
We'll be safe because there's the gayest kid that ever lived. And when he gets his diploma, I'll go, that's my son.
We call that patriotic.
And the crowd starts to clap a little, and I look at the guy next to me and I go, he's much gayer than yours. Guy's like, my son's not gay. I go,
but,
sure.
But here's the here's what I want to get at, though. So Kevin Hart apologized.
He apologized 5 years ago.
But then he started apologizing again.
Calm down. You're in a hysteric.
Around with Ellen encouraging him. He apologized again. And then Don Lemon gets on and goes, these apologies don't affect the misery and the bullying of gay people. It's like,
neither does the joke.
Do you want a good? Do you want Kevin Hart to go back in a time machine and fight the affect, guy that hit you in high school? I mean, what is he supposed to do?
The gay people's lives.
But
either.
What is he supposed to do? Is my question. The same thing of Louis. What are they supposed to do?
Look at Ray Lewis. He slapped. He punched his fiance in the face. The most abhorrent thing we've ever fucking seen.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
Outside of seeing a kid raped, seeing a guy punch a woman, an NFL athlete punching a woman straight down the barrel.
Yeah.
He gave all of his money to women's charities. They're now married happily, not a peep out of Ray Rice land. And he said, if I get another chance in the NFL, I will give all of my paychecks to women's charities. There's a videotape. No team wants it. Colin Kaepernick. No team wants the hassle. It's all reactionary. We're all – that's the fucking bullshit from that book, The Coddling of the American Mind from Columbia University. That's good versus evil. Ray Rice is evil. Ray Rice is not evil. I know Ray Rice. Ray Rice is a good guy who had a terrible fucking day and a terrible bunch of months. And people go, well, as an NFL running back, he was kind of falling off. If you punch your wife in the face, your work isn't going to be that good that year. I'm sorry. There's going to be a dip in productivity if that's how fucked up your head is. Ray Lewis to this day, people go, he's a murderer. No, he's not. He's a beautiful person, Ray.
When I saw it, I knew he witnessed that as a child.
Sure.
That's what he grew up in, childhood trauma.
He's drunk in a casino and she wouldn't give him his fucking chips. let's call a spade a spade here.
But there are behavioral models though that people respond to if they see something in their childhood and stuff. So
but there's got to be some forgiveness in this country.
Well, that's
or
what
we're
I don't
lost.
Understand.
To Drew's point, if you went to jail for murder and you pled guilty to that murder, you murdered somebody, no doubt about it. You do 16 years in jail, you get out of jail, rehabilitated. People have you want to, people will hire you.
You're supposed to. It's supposed to be a penitence. You've
done
your
penitentiary. So it's worse than if you actually were guilty of murder. When Louis, I just said this on more
stories. You get your day in court as a murder suspect.
That's correct. Louis C.K. goes to do the Comedy Cellar. They protest on McDougal Street outside the Comedy Cellar. You know what you make to do a set at the Comedy Cellar?
$40, $20.
Yeah. You get food at the fucking.
You get food upstairs.
Yeah, it's good food. I protest. I couldn't get to my goddamn food. I'd be out there swinging on protesters. Don't fuck up my shawarma, man.
Yeah, but you have to sit with all those other comedians at that
table. Yeah, I want Keith Robinson to kick the shit out of me. And Colin. All right. Look at all the post-its outside.
God.
So, like, Colin, that offends me. The fact that people are protesting Louis C.K. going to make $20 and people in the audience, maybe there's 40 people at that time at 1 o'clock in the morning that are left in the room. You offend me, protester, more profoundly than you're faking that you're fucking offended that he did some fucking joke or he jerked off in front of other comedians.
Right. So there's sort of a I still don't.
Where
think,
does it all end is the
well,
question.
Well, that's. But it only ends if you have.
Monsters of Rock. Iron Maiden versus Tenacious D. And all bets are off. Those are my final two, by the way, of all bands
really?
Ever. Oh, yeah.
Tenacious D.
God. Maiden versus Tenacious D. And fucking Let's Just Let It Go 15 rounds like the old days. You can't fuck with the D.
But who's the singer of Iron Maiden?
Bruce Dickinson.
Oh, yeah. Maybe he's not in it.
No,
maybe he's not
my
in
version
it.
He's in it.
Does Drew know that?
But Bruce Harris writes the song.
People
still.
Who love Iron Maiden only love Bruce Dickinson, Iron Maiden. It went on without him.
It's not like
back.
Journey where you get like a Filipino guy to make pretend he's Steve Perry.
Steve Perry is not the original singer of Journey, by the way.
But he is.
Greg Raleigh is.
All right. Well, Ron Wood's not the original or the second original guitarist for the Stones either.
Van Halen.
Which
Van Halen singer?
Black Widow.
Sam
Hagar. So, I
would like to. I love Sammy.
I would
good
like to
you.
Understand better how people can.
I don't know him as a person.
Can have be resurrected if they're ways back. If they're roads
I think artists
back.
It's
are
not
gonna...
up to the person. I think it's with happiness. It's an inside job. Louis has to find something within himself where the protesters don't. And it's easier said than done, man.
Well, you're one of the first people I heard. Went back in the early days of Twitter, where you were on Loveline years ago, and you went, you would get off the set and you'd check Twitter, and
it was a bad thing.
Yeah, and your initial contact, I'll never forget this. You went, these people should not be able to have access to me. That's what you said. They should.
But I'm
be
the
able
one
to,
that I'm the, I held the door.
You
for
allowed
them.
It, I know, but the fact is they have an access that's uncanny and not really supposed to be a part
the only
of the
free
performing.
Speech is the people that leave comments under YouTube videos
or
articles. You can say the N-word. You can drop anti-Semitic stuff. You can be misogynist. And you're just some guy like Milkman 420, Camaroland 82 underscore
But it caused you distress. I remember that. That's like 15 years
ago. Yeah, I did.
Ago.
I was doing World of Warcraft, a BlizzCon convention. I walk off stage, 6,000 people. And I go to my hotel room and I check Twitter to see how I did.
Oh,
I was just
God.
There.
Oh, dear.
And that's like Yogi Berra said, if people don't want to come, we can't stop them. So, like, I stopped checking ticket counts. I just did the Canyon Club. I knew it was going to be full. I saw fucking Buddy Guy there. The Canyon Club's where you see, like, two-thirds of Foreigner. Like, the three tops. You go see the Spinners. Two of them are white.
Where is that?
The English Beat's coming up.
Yeah, they're always there.
Where's the Canyon Club?
Agora Hills. It's great. It's really great.
Canyon Road.
You
it's a great club.
I just did it. And it's like, you know,
unfortunately, it's right across, right down the street from where that violent shoot-up was.
Yeah, the
I played there, too. Borderline. That was a great place. Yeah.
You've been there?
I played there.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you do Texas call-out dance lines, too?
Well, no.
Comedy.
No, there's comedy there. There's comedy
there was?
Stand-up.
Yeah, it was great. It was they did it right. Like, it was great.
Really?
So where is the redemption? What was it?
Yeah, how do people get redemption? Where does this go?
Where does it go? I don't
think
know.
Because there has to be – you have to be a nerd to criticism. And what surprised me –
you just keep going?
Yeah. That's life is repetition. Buzz Williams, basketball coach at Bautech, used to be at Marquette. He asked me once via text, he said, take a while to answer. He said, if you had to do your entire career, the reason for your success in one word only, what would that word be? Don't answer for at least a week. And finally, it was like 2 weeks. I wrote repetition.
Yeah, persistence.
Repetition. Yeah. Sobriety. Yeah. Repetition. Keep coming back. It works if you work it. Yeah. Right. Love. Repetition. You got to empty the tank. Athletics. Repetition. Keep shooting. So, yeah, it's like when I wrote Gasping for Airtime, I'm reading bad reviews about my book about what happened to me, with my depression, my alcoholism on Saturday Night Live. My book about this is what happens Monday. This is what happens Tuesday. Not Tom Shales getting people stories and becoming an author.
Yeah.
Like, this is my experience. This is the beauty of Chris Farley, the most fucking most brilliant, beautiful man I've ever known. And there's negative reviews. I'm like, you're criticizing what happened to me. I'm just a reporter. That's why I only write autobiographies. You know, my second book, No Wonder My Parents Drank. There's bad reviews. And it's like, that was when I started turning the corner of, I used to be disgusted. Now I try to stay amused. Speaking Elvis of another Costello. Elvis. I'm like, wow, this is kind of fascinating. My stand-up's impeccable. You can't fucking say anything about my stand-up. I'm the greatest living stand-up comedian. Period. Don't be the best at what you do, being the only one that does what you do.
Right.
Nobody's doing what I do on stage. Nobody goes deeper down into that well than I do. Nobody makes an audience like realize. You know Melora Walters?
Mm-mm.
She was Don Cheadle's wife in Boogie Nights, and she's just brilliant, a beautiful actress and a beautiful artist. She came to my show at the Improv. She goes, this isn't me like glossing myself, but she goes, it was kind of weird because I felt like I was going to cry. And if I was going to cry, I wasn't going to be able to stop, and I'd be really embarrassed. And I'm going, this is so sad. And then I started laughing, and then I couldn't stop laughing. And when you said goodnight, it's like somebody hit the brakes on like a boat.
And you blew the police chief.
Yeah, Eddie Collins. Yeah. To Drew's point, the moment Louis apologized, that's between him and the women that said he did what he did.
No, I agree with that.
There's no public apology. Nobody in fucking Glendale needs an apology because I sat across from comedians and jerked off and said, you want to come back to my room and watch me jerk off? Sure. We're new to show business. We feel really uncomfortable, but I get, you know. Louis's not a predator. Louis didn't sexually assault anybody, rape anybody. It's a fucking assault to your eyes to watch a fat, freckled redhead jerk off and wheeze and get all sweaty. But there's the fucking door.
People forget he's Mexican.
You can just get up and walk out. And I'm always with the victim. Always. That needs, if you're going to isolate anything, isolate this too, you cocks. Don't fucking take it out of context. When I used to do my radio show and people go, what if he didn't do it? I'm like, what if he did?
Yeah.
Like, are you out of your minds? So you just have to reach a point of not giving a fuck. And I tell the audience, I go, let me tell you something. I've been divorced twice, sober twice, gave the IRS $700,000 twice. I'm all out of fucks. I'm empty. I'm fucking an empty vessel.
No giving a fuck.
That's it. You can't.
Well, let's talk about Chris, though.
We got to take a break.
Okay.
Right, Bob,
get your head in the game.
Right, God, I'm looking.
Well, CBDs are everywhere, right? Everyone's talking about them, and it's a topic that I get asked about all the time. Bottom line on CBD, although there are way more claims made about them, the clinical evidence right now, it's not all that clear, but many people are using it and reporting great results, and they are very encouraging. So I want to first define exactly what I'm talking about here. CBD is cannabidiol, an extract from hemp. While you might associate with marijuana, CBD does not cause reinforcement. It is not the reinforcing component of hemp, but it is what's responsible for the calming or some of the relaxing effects that many people experience, not the high. Now about the products. There are a ton of them on the market today. Forgetting the vast array of the reported health benefits, it's important to be aware of what you're buying. I was recently introduced to a company called Select CBD, an Oregon-based company that focuses on high-quality ingredients and manufacturing standards, not the hype. Their CBD-based products are available in a wide range of formulations and flavors, each of which is described to you so you can make an informed decision without all those promises that are probably too good to be true. Like I said, the reported benefits of CBD by individuals using this are very compelling. I'm excited to see how things develop as the science catches up with this booming industry. As usual, the public is ahead of the science. I can't make explicit claims yet, but boy, the reports are pretty encouraging. So if you're ready to try CBD, I encourage you to check out Select CBD. To learn more, go to drdrew.com/select. That's on my site, drdrew.com/SELECT. And for a limited time, you can save 25% at checkout with the code DrDrew, DrDrew. Again, drdrew.com/select, and then the code DrDrew. If you or someone you know is dealing with addiction, someone you love, finding treatment is difficult. It's very frustrating. It is a minefield out there. And the truth is, every patient's needs are different and evolving. People behind True Recovery in Orange County, California, realize that effective care is not one size fits all. That's why they have developed a comprehensive range of treatments that can address all facets of this disease. True Recovery's master-level clinicians maintain small caseloads. They personally manage your case, allowing them to personalize the care. They offer individualized treatment plans from residential to outpatient, and always with an eye on a holistic approach and a focus on accountability. And as patients become ready, this is a key part of what True Recovery offers. They offer assistance with life and coping skills, school and vocational coordination, as well as community reintegration support and aftercare. I've spoken with the medical director at True Recovery, and I was impressed with the range of therapeutic modalities and psychiatric services. Their experienced team is well-equipped to manage patients at all levels of care. To request information how True Recovery can provide you the personalized care you need, go to drdrew.com/true. Again, that is drdrew.com/T-R-U-E. And we're back. You want to talk about Chris?
Chris, I you know my story. I tried to get sober for 8 years, 9 years. I was always at the super secret society meetings, and Chris was trying too.
With the Freemasons,
right? Chris was trying. Yeah. And so there was this couple of years where we were overlapping, trying. We were always the new guys, or just had 13 days.
Really? Hey, Bob.
Yeah. And he had a blue outfit. He had a blue outfit that was like kind of like Elvis, like a jumpsuit that he would wear. It was the boldest fucking thing you ever saw. This is in 1994 grunge rock and roll Hollywood. And this guy wears like an Elvis outfit.
Well, you came in with beer.
Yeah,
he
drank
comes
beer
in his blue outfit.
He comes in with strong. That's a power
He might have been there that time that I drank the beer.
That's a power move.
Two of them.
But
I like
was
that.
He just, but rather than what I always felt like, I didn't know him that well, talk in that context. It just seemed like he can't grunge or junkie us. So he's going to go in this total opposite direction with this weird polyester jumpsuit.
That's beautiful.
But when powder blue.
When I was on SNL, and I put this in the book, I go, what really struck me about Chris was how fucking handsome he was. Like when he slicked his hair back and put on a suit jacket and his boots and jeans.
And he wasn't sweaty from
coke.
He
looked like Nicholson. Like he kind of looked like Nicholson. Like he had those tinted sunglasses you wear inside because they tint when you go inside indoors. You know, his glasses would be. And he was like. He was a movie star.
70s.
He looked like
70s.
A fucking movie star.
70s.
So, yeah, that makes sense to me. But you bringing a beer to a meeting. You know what I love about that? You meant it.
I meant, well.
Like, this is the level of my defiance.
I drank a six-pack.
Bob's good at fuck you. He's very good at it.
Nobody.
Not good at returning texts or calls.
Now,
either.
Here's the interesting thing. That was probably in 93, 94. And nobody did a thing. Nobody came up to me, asked me to leave. It was in a big Third and Gardner, 200 people meeting. I was just drinking them. And
so big.
I was throwing the empty cans into the trash can about 8 feet away. Nobody said anything. Speaker was this guy, Big Ray. I made amends to him. He's the greatest guy. I was three rows back. He didn't address it.
You were in the front row?
Third from last.
Oh, my God.
Third front. Right in front.
Were you high also?
No, he
wasn't.
I had
no, but I mean also on something else.
Heroin and coke.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay, a few.
We don't dabble, Drew. But, they dabble in it, yeah.
But it was a 12-step call. I was trying to hawk this watch that a friend of mine had given me, and my friends knew it. I didn't have an ID, so I went to a friend's house, asked him if he would go to Elliot Salter Pawn Shop with me and pawn the watch with me.
Sound
and
he like
goes, dude, somebody just... So-and-so just bought you that watch. And I go, I know. I'm just pawning it. I'm not selling it.
I'll be right back.
But I didn't have ID. So they said, I'll give you $100 for the watch if you go to a meeting with me. So that was the meeting. And then I said, okay. But I need to get a six-pack of beer. And I just didn't think they would
Did anything in that meeting with the six-pack, like, do you think anything, like, sunk in?
Yes. Now watch what happens. At the end, nobody kicks me out. I'm thinking they're going to kick me out or something.
That's what you wanted.
Yeah, that's what I wanted.
Yeah,
I didn't want to be there.
I see you, brother.
So at the end, as we're stepping outside in this courtyard, everyone in that meeting said, keep coming back, Bob.
Come on, Bob. We got you.
I must have heard it like 70 times. Keep coming back.
He was the mascot.
People hug me.
He was the Philly fanatic.
I was the fucking pathetic mascot.
He was the San Diego chicken.
You don't think that pissed him off more than anything else in his life?
Oh, my God. They were kind to me. They were kind and funny.
Don't they
Fuck
know how
them.
Rotten I am? Yeah, because we were rotten, too.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So I'm going to roll back to the conversation we were having about Columbia a second. So my theory is that all the administrators in all the college campuses all over the country were the kids that were the anti-war protesters in the 60s. And now they've grown up, and now they are the administrators of colleges. And the big thing about
Napolitano, you think is? The woman at Pitzer resigned because she used the wrong term for somebody from Central America.
Because
can't say Mexican.
Beaner?
You're a comedian. Because you can say
Central
that
American.
Oh. Point is, they're afraid to be adults. Because in the 60s, it was like, don't trust adults. Nobody over 30. No one over 30 knows anything. Kids are the repository of wisdom. And so they put all their faith into young people.
I had these kids that are, you know, with the new LGBTQ OBGYN, where you have to say
the
whole
gynecologist children.
So I was a part of ACT UP in the 80s. And you got 20-year-old kids who don't even know what ACT UP is saying I'm homophobic because I make fun of the LGBTQ.
I make fun of everybody because I love everybody and I loathe everybody and I'm a human being. And it's like I said earlier, that's my tribe. Like, I'm anti-gay. I'm in fucking showbiz. Like, you're in showbiz. Yeah. Like, that's the tribe. Mm-hmm. I can't, like, file people away by groups. Like, that's the miscast. That's finally who took me in.
It feels like people are getting off on being angry and outraged, though.
Yes.
It's the ultimate currency. The more angry, the more outraged, the more you can sustain it, the more status you get.
But does, like Jay said, is it because they are so upset by Trump or by Kavanaugh that they're taking it out on Louis
I think
Kevin
Trump
Hart
is the inciting flame and it's catching everything on fire. But this stuff was already in them. He didn't create it. This is stuff now pouring out of people because of they're frustrated
with
him.
Who were they mad at when Obama was president?
Obama. He's black and all. He's blackness.
No, if you remember,
what were the liberals mad about during Obama?
Here's what I remember from that era. I'm a fan of Obama, but here's what I remember thinking. I remember thinking, these people are hubristic. They're telling everybody how to live and think, and somebody's going to react to that. You can't have hubris.
Who's hubristic?
Hillary was very hubristic. We got to believe any woman that is made any claim, you believe her. It's like, how about the women that talked about your husband? How about them? I'm the good guy. Don't look at me. I'm the good guy. It's like, that's hubris. That defines hubris. Don't look at me.
But
I'm looking at you.
That's more recent. I'm talking about the years.
That plays to the narcissist.
Correct.
If I light a fire over here, you don't really look
inside
here.
But that's
how
it all.
Day three of rehab. That guy's an asshole. I'm not talking to that motherfucker. Because as long as I keep this out here, the perimeter fire and the skirmish line going, you never say, how are you?
And that's what's going on. So that was that side. And then the right had all this anger and rage and all this bullshit that Trump, let out.
Viagra's
so it's two
insured.
Things.
What's the rage?
What?
Why are they angry? Viagra's insured.
No, I think they
deliver anonymously to your house now. I saw a commercial.
It's why I'm in the middle. Both sides have got to.
No, but
a good
who are they
themselves.
Mad at? So they're taking it all out. This whole movement came as a result of Trump. I've heard this theory 100 times. Who that gurgling liberal fascism? Who was it aimed at in 2009, 2010, 2011.
I'm glad you said that because it is liberals that are throwing
liberal
shit at
fascism.
Louis and Kevin. Mm-hmm. It is totally like a liberal-leaning crowd.
Right. They're the ones that are going to tell you how to live, how to think.
Cuckold Hollywood faggot. That's what I get all the time.
Who are they mad at?
I'll tell the governors of New Jersey what I voted. tell Chris Christie he needs my vote back.
They're mad at anyone who doesn't do what they tell them.
No, who are the targets of the Obama era? I feel like if Trump triggered it and Kavanaugh solidified it, what is it? Where was that anger going for those 8 years when they had the president they wanted?
It was going into opiates and things like that and festering. And there are anthropologists and sociologists that say had he not been elected, they have grave concerns about what these people would have done. That it would have been some sort of really serious, like I don't know what they would have, how they would have acted out.
I think they're mad at themselves, a life for settling. Like you can't.
I
really
get mad at myself for settling.
You should. You were born magnificent.
I don't think we could really tell yet what it really is because we're going through a shift. It might be demographic shift.
I think it's the fact that people settle, and people. This is my universal thing about value, and that is, how tall are you, Drew?
6 feet.
All right, you're 6 feet tall. That's the vessel of value. So when you have cognitive thought three, four years old, in your own home, the way the grown-ups talk to each other, the way they talk to you, maybe they have cigarette smoke in their eye, mm-hmm. or maybe they're hungover, they're yelling, everything's too close, too loud, mm-hmm. too confusing, then where'd everybody go? You feel 5'10" of value at that age. Then there's trauma, which can mean a neighbor hangs himself next door. It could be molestation. It could be anything. The death of somebody in the family. Then you feel 5'9" about you. Then you have a girlfriend in high school. You date her. You have sex for the first time. It's great. She goes, he's got a little dick and he's fucking dumped me. Blah, blah. Everybody's laughing at you. 5'8" of value. Then you meet a girl who comes in at 5'7" of value and you go, hey, that's almost full. No, we started here and we're accepting subconsciously almost a half foot less of our vessel's ability to accept our value. And what I try to do is get people to see, like, Drew, you're 70 fucking feet of value. You're like one of the most valuable people in my life, for real. You know that. I've told you that before. Bob, just keep working at it.
I'm trying.
But that's that subconscious concession, that living someplace to, like, whatever, the marrying the lady that gives you a fucking ear beat and you can't even believe it, and just letting your kids get obese and just letting a boss kick the shit out of you and never pursuing your passion. Look, nobody's born common, man. And when you accept common, you want to rail against something. And then an artist pops up, and you go, yeah, fuck that guy. Didn't really mean it. It's the same guy they loved 3 years ago. Somebody else talked. Jesus.
Sounded like you knew what you were talking about.
Well, I am a life coach, not certified by anybody, but I can help you.
There is, the emptiness at the heart of the American dream is another way of putting it. The American dream
Thank
is
you.
We live in this house and love each other and fight and get along and know our neighbors and play football in the street. That's the American dream, not the fucking house and the purses and the cars.
Right,
I grew up in the American dream. It was about me and my sisters and my uncles and aunts and people and playing sports and having fun.
You omitted your parents.
It's about people.
You omitted your parents.
Well, I mean,
they were a bit of pain
their
in the
focus of the American dream was on their children, on their families,
yeah,
on their neighborhood.
You your own mom and dad. It's interesting.
Well, they were my grandparents.
You don't understand something. He had a sister mom.
I got it.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying?
I'm like a code breaker.
The American dream got broken, and people believe now that it's about the house in Rancho Cucamonga that has 3,300 square feet, and it's about the car
your
that you
American
drive.
Dream is the Inland Empire. Then just fucking eat a bullet tonight. Go. I hope the waiting list for your firearm cleared, and you can just swallow a 38 fucking slug.
There's McMansions out there.
You know what look good on this
you
wall?
You haven't been out there.
You know what would look good on this wall? Me. Holy
your
shit.
Your brains?
Ontario, Inland Empire, Lancaster.
You guys are
He's attacking my town.
Well, look.
What about Upland? You got something bad to say about Upland?
I got respect for Upland. I got hardcore dudes in Upland. I got love for a bunch of real you dogs, man.
There's hockey in Upland.
But we have...
isolate that.
We've forsaken people for things, bottom line, right?
I think
we're not given a priority.
I think that it's a misunderstanding multi-generationally as to what the American dream was. It really wasn't the house and the barbecue and the two cars in the garage.
It Maybe
was
it is,
about,
though, but now you're dictating.
But it was about the family living there.
Right, but now you're telling me what my American dream is.
Yeah.
You want two cars? I can get you a house in Rancho Cucamonga.
I'll take it.
See, I think there's more more hidden from us than we realize in terms of
life is a Springsteen.
The impact of World War II and even the Civil War, I think, still has impact.
Look, let me come back. We'll just do evolutionary psychology because that's my jam. I love it too. So much.
Me too.
But like, life is
Go ahead,
a Springsteen
start with it.
Song.
Come on.
It's like there's something better just out of reach. Yeah, always. No matter where you go, there's another wrong.
Did you see his play?
Well, his show on Broadway.
His show, yeah.
I didn't like the monologue.
Yeah.
When I was a little kid, we don't care. That's why I don't get to hear Candy's Room, because of a story about you getting your fucking haircut.
Well, the thing that he does say that I
My
like
man,
is,
you say, when
I wrote,
shut up.
But he wrote these songs about shit he knows nothing about. That's how great a songwriter he is.
He's one of the absolute greatest.
Darkness on the Edge of Town is one of the greatest songs written in my generation.
Candy's Room, baby. That's what's up. I always say Springsteen is what everybody tries to tell me Dylan is.
Right. For
the... At some point, you got to fucking deliver live. You know, that's why,
Dylan can't deliver
as
live.
As KRS-One said, being dope live is like being insured for life because they'll always come back more than twice.
Yeah.
Be careful around Bob talking about Dylan. Be careful.
Live. He's
truth
talking about
truth.
Live.
Yeah.
But Springsteen, I've always known that he really didn't experience those things.
Yeah, like there's no Hazy Jane. There's no... Well, Nick Drake.
He's not a car guy.
Why are you asking about the Broadway show then?
He just because he talks about it. He says it finally. He went along with John Landau's whole story that that's really who he is, and he comes from America. He's a rock star, always has been. He lived off girlfriends in Asbury Park. He never had a job. He never had a job in his life. No, I knew he was a musician like me. I knew he was a musician like me. Not like how, like, Steve Earle or something from Nashville or something.
But don't you
like the Steve original Earle? Bassist Steve for Earle has had real jobs. You know what I mean? He worked in that gas station.
And
Bruce Springsteen only wrote about the guy who worked in the gas station.
Don't you think it's weird that we have glamorized and glorified songwriters and musicians so crazily in the last 40 years?
It's the
like
new
crazy.
It's new novelists.
Because they make us feel.
I understand.
That's what I'm talking
part
about
of
stand-up
ambient.
Comedy.
I think stand-up is
comedy
the new version.
Is the only job where you go and buy a ticket to feel joy. Think about that. You have a ticket to experience joy with strangers who are also at a table next to you experiencing joy. Outside of a fucking Morrissey concert, there's no sad ticket. Oh, my first night, sitting on Drew's couch.
Being, what's the character? Oh, the character you reference being a big and small character in a big chair.
So oh, Edith Ann?
Edith Ann. Edith
I'm
Ann.
In the corner of the couch. I feel small. They don't listen to what I say.
Is that the Gilda Radner character?
Lily Tomlin.
Lily Tomlin.
She dressed like a little kid and sat in a giant ass chair.
Yeah, a big rocking chair. Yeah.
Oh,
but Radner had a character like that, too. So, Lubner? Lisa Lubner or something?
Two beauties, man.
Yeah.
That's eternal life right there.
Comedy is eternal life.
Springsteen's got gay love songs.
I know.
Backstreet's is a fucking gay love song. Terry's a dude.
I didn't want to bring that up, but
I mean, it's like,
is he gay?
Yeah, it's rumored
that he's actually gay. Yeah, does he have a wife?
He's gay. I just think he's a genius.
Does he have a wife?
Yeah, lots of gay men have wives.
No, I understand. I'm just trying to figure out what he's up to. What he's
you know, it's the 70s. Everybody
I've
does
never
whatever
heard
they
a whisper of Springsteen being gay, and I've been in bathhouses.
Well, why the?
There you go. Whisper. Bono asked Bruce once, "Why don't you write songs about yourself?" And he goes, I do gigs, I go home, or what I write about.
Wow.
It's like, he's aware. That's all he does. He's a reporter. And thank God he's a reporter. Like, let's meet tonight beneath that giant Exxon sign that brings this fair city light. Like, he knows that. That's just Parsippany, New Jersey, you know?
I guess they're poets now. To me, the greatest poet of the last 40 years.
Bob Dylan. Is Bob Dylan, according to the Nobel laureates?
I'll tell you
what do they know?
I'll tell you what it is. It's Richard Pryor.
I disagree. Carlin, by far.
He didn't have the poetry.
But Pryor has six albums where there's not one laugh. He's just whacked on heroin, and the crowd's on P-Funk with him. Nothing.
I'm not saying he was always great.
Carlin, there's not one miss in the catalog. From start to finish, every single album.
I don't think he intended those original albums to come out, Richard Pryor. They came out after he was famous.
He recorded it to be something.
He determined
with
it was shitty and didn't put it on vinyl or didn't put it out.
They were released then.
Were they?
If you listen to the Wino versus Dracula,
I've got them all.
Well, no, that nigga's
there's
crazy.
A thing called eBay.
Have you heard of it? Bad bits in the, it's like the Who don't have a perfect album. There's terrible Who songs that fuck
there's
up.
Two,
but back
Who
to
albums.
Carlin though. Carlin, I'm not sure that was poetry though, right? That was almost like
fuck Tucker. Tucker sucks. That's poetry. That's the most concision economy of words. Three words in a four-word sentence.
Yeah.
Fuck Tucker. Tucker sucks. There's a meter.
Yeah, yeah.
Like poetry. I'm getting really sick of guys named Todd and Kyle and Tyler. Hi, Todd. I'm Tucker. Fuck Tucker. He's talking about Todd. And at the end, he says, fuck Tucker. Tucker sucks. Tucker doesn't exist. You have to create Tucker in this amount of time. Go. Stop. In that amount, fuck Tucker. Tucker sucks. You have to create your own Tucker and agree with him to the point of applause and yelling. He's a fucking wizard. And fuck Todd and guys that look like Todd.
Right.
You have to create Todd. Like, hey, a family newsletter. Like, Dennis just got at the dental school. Yeah, in the Philippines. On his third try. Luann turned 12. Who gives a shit? Show me a picture of Luann's tits. Like, you forget that he's talking about a fucking 12-year-old. It's like, he's the greatest. Like, I could teach college classes on spatial relations, English. I should have led with English. English, like, science, just using Carlin albums. The Earth is fine. The people are fucked. When he goes through like the reversal of the magnetic poles and this, and you think it's all going to shut down because of plastic bags? The arrogance.
Yeah.
Over 90%, way over, of all species on Earth are extinct. Gone. We didn't kill them all. Yeah. Can we let them go gracefully? He goes, what if the only reason the Earth is here is because it couldn't make plastic? Why are we here? Plastic. And once the Earth realizes that we've done that for it, it'll shake us off like a case of fleas.
So surface nuisance.
So you don't think that's philosopher more than poet?
Yeah.
It's both.
No.
In the end, he's really making almost angry comments about the America that we're talking about, that he saw becoming.
Not in my backyard. Like, all people care about are fucking clean bike paths. You know, like, don't build a prison in my backyard. That's probably the safest neighborhood in the world. Like, nobody gets out of prison and goes, I'm just going to hang out outside the moat. I'm going to hang out outside the moat. Those are my words.
But he talks about stuff and then getting a place for your stuff. You got a storage place for your stuff.
That's poetry.
That's beautiful.
You go to Hawaii, you have to take a smaller version of your stuff. You get to the hotel, you put all your stuff away. Then your friend goes, hey, we're going to go to the other island, Kauai. Oh, shit.
I got to bring a little less stuff.
Then you go, hey, we're going to go to the other end of the island tonight. Oh, Jesus Christ. Just the things that are absolutely necessary. Nail file, condom, Pepto-Bismol, floss that tastes like mint, and a book of cars that's, I don't know what the fuck he says, but it's brilliant.
In the modern context, I don't know that Richard Pryor, Lenny Bruce, obviously, George Carlin,
would be able to
Cheech and Chong, none of these people, Charles Bukowski, the Rolling Stones, none of this could happen anymore.
It will
in this
always,
modern context.
It has to happen.
But it can't.
And it does. We're talking about, Louis, is happening in a show for 240 people,
well,
none of which complained.
But it's the Jordan Petersons and the Sam Harrises and people like that that are sort of are being called now the intellectual dark web, where they're speaking their minds. But it's all happening on the DL. No?
Well, yeah. I mean, but who's the fucking really bad shit guy?
He interviewed
the right wing guy. That
he
like
interviewed
screams
him.
And
then Neo. He's talking about the long Greek name.
No, not that guy.
Not that guy.
He's like an American guy.
You said the craziest guy. That's the craziest guy.
Alex Jones.
Oh yeah.
That's
eventually it's
he's
chatter,
mentally ill.
And you tune out the chatter.
Yeah.
And it's just cyclical, I believe. Like, you know, I said it today. Like, I'm sorry to keep referencing my own podcast,
that's
but
okay, we'll listen.
It's thank you, love. Susan Pinsky, ladies and gentlemen. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
It's like the Rolling Stones, Straight Cat Blues. You look so lonesome. You're so far from home. I could tell that you're just 15 years old. And the live version of Love You Lot, Get Your Yayas Out, he says 13 years old.
Yeah.
That's having sex with, I bet your mother don't know you scratch like that. Like, you couldn't do any of these songs. I shot
the
sheriff. I didn't shoot the deputy.
The 70s were all about horrible behavior. The songs were all about it.
But that's what we love.
Behavior.
It's like, you know, it's cyclical. It will happen. Because there's a pushback to the pushback.
Yeah, your point that people will just roll on and stop listening to it, I think that's a possibility.
I think it's to the critics.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
I'll say this to your listeners. Be very careful what you're outraged over, because I want you to envision an entertainment life of safe. Going out to see music that's safe. Going to see stand-up comedy with a comic that doesn't take any chances.
Can't offend anyone.
Doesn't
but,
share
but the
anything.
Problem
goes
is,
down.
The problem is plays. The people that hire people.
Go
to
watch
create
E-Hall.
I'm just saying to create entertainment. The people that hire are so fearful of the mob that when the mob get going, you lose your job.
Right.
And so that's the problem.
I agree.
I think the employers need to say, we'll look into it. First thing we're going to do is not fire that person. Right. You've got to stop gratifying
with we're
going to
boycott your sponsors. Well, good luck with that.
Yeah. First thing, no firing.
Right.
Secondly, we're going to look into it ourselves, and if there's a problem, we will.
You know
what's
the funniest thing when they boycott? This is the last thing I'll bring up. When they boycott the sponsors, they did that with something a couple years ago, and I looked it up. And I'm a regular viewer of Fox News because I want to know what the hell those people are seeing, right?
Amazing.
So those ads that they're going after, like I forget who it was, what actor was on some TV show, and they were saying, you know, I think it was like Johnson & Johnson or something. There's Johnson & Johnson ads on Fox News. Do the liberals know that? But they never watch it.
Right.
Why don't they go ban everything that's advertised on Fox News? It never dawns on them because they're so angry at Louis C.K.
Because they're not examining their feelings. That's all right. That's my overarching message, Drew and Bob.
All right.
Like Buzz Williams.
Read your feelings.
Herman Edwards always says, don't hit send. don't hit send. Don't hit send. That's what he tells athletes when they're coming into the league. Before you have a reaction that you share with somebody else, just wait one day, just 24 hours. Don't tell anybody how you feel about how outraged you were. Can you fucking believe that musician did this, or this person partied over here, or this guy did coke off a fucking minor's dick over there? Like, just examine.
Wait a minute, a minor underage or a minor that works
Chilean.
In the coal mine?
When
Chilean.
Will we? When will we
I'm not filthy.
When will we shame the shamers? Is really the question.
Well, we are right now,
and
that's
actively.
Good.
We're not there. They're
no. Well, that's the whole conversation. Is these people are fucking insane. Yeah. So before you react and share your feeling of negativity, like the Four Agreements, be impeccable with your word.
Oh, my God.
Steven Adler.
Yeah,
realizing
ahead.
That sharing outrage isn't impeccability without sin. You're clouding someone else's vision with your idea. Just examine it for one day before you share it. And I'm going to bet that pilot light goes all the way down and goes completely out because something good's going to roll across your radar and you're going to go, hey, this neat thing, this guy, I just met the celebrity. He was really nice to me at the airport. He held my baby or something, you know.
And not only that, give people time to apologize or respond or whatever to missteps. That's the
Nobody owes me a goddamn apology for anything they've fucking done publicly. Anybody. Like, from
my
Jimmy
dad.
Swaggart, I have sinned against you. You didn't fucking sin against me. You had sex with a prostitute.
And got caught.
I've done it in my life.
And got caught.
That's, I would never think, I should really apologize to all the ABC viewers.
How about my
dad?
That
I saw an in-call escort, bareback blowjob, because it was only $200 on my way home.
Here's the real America.
My
dad hated the Beatles.
Yes.
My dad hated the Beatles.
Well, he's an idiot.
Well, he did.
In that,
like,
I'm making a
he
joke.
Was a racist. But
I'm making a joke in regards
understand.
To the Beatles.
No, he hated the Beatles. Too. But he didn't. Not let me and my sisters listen to the Beatles. We had to listen to it in our rooms. We couldn't listen to it in the living room on the good stereo.
That's great.
That's what America used to be. Now it's no Beatles. If you don't like the Beatles, you don't allow,
well, no,
you don't
no.
want the
remember,
Beatles played anywhere.
Remember, what you want to teach your kids is they're evil, we must work on destroying them.
The Beatles are.
Whatever's evil. I'm going to tell you what's evil because it's either good or evil. And if the parent sees evil, they indoctrinate the kids. You saw with the six-year-olds crying when Trump was elected.
I know. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah. No 6-year-olds have that capacity.
Of course not.
Ask me if I think Yoko Ono broke up the Beatles.
Did Yoko Ono break up the Beatles?
She did not break up the Beatles. That's mine. Yeah, Bob. You're looking at him. I got to pee really bad.
All right,
yeah,
we got to wrap it up.
We got to go pee. That's it.
I hope it's not a year and a half till I see you again. And that's not
that
me. Like, it was pretty long. That's not me. Susan's been on top
I
of it, though.
Tried.
That's correct.
You had a.
Are you playing in Claremont?
Montclair. New Jersey, you scumbag.
Wait.
I'm not going. All right. Don't get me started on the Empire, Bob. 909. All right.
Do you not go past the 605 freeway?
No, I got wrestling tournaments in Upland and stuff now. So
I
root for my own kids
that's
to lose, so I don't have to go back on Sunday.
Right,
wait for the other guy to take a move.
That's an old Sinbad joke. Like, you ever root for your own kid to lose so you can sleep till 9 on a Saturday? Like, weigh-ins are at 7 a.m. in fucking El Monte.
Yes, we have.
Oh, my God.
Pico
Rivera?
Bunch of Latin kids that are built like whippets waiting to get on a scale in their underwear. It's kind of hot, though.
We've done that.
It is kind of hot.
But now, you have some good shows coming up that aren't sold out, right?
I'm actually not sure, but all Calgary is coming up at the end of the month. All my dates are at jmore.com. That's a much more.
I thought you were
some
be,
got canceled.
I thought you were going to be like in LA and Pasadena. Some
that happened already.
Oh, it did. Okay, yeah. That's weird.
Jmore.com where all my dates are there.
We could have come see
your
you.
Facebook is behind.
I'm not on Facebook, so.
Well,
I don't
well
know
somebody
maybe
is.
That's
yeah.
why.
Somebody is.
Yeah, I can't keep up.
But you can go to jmore.
I'm on Instagram, jmore37, Twitter, jmore37, jmore.com.
And then you're doing. You have a regular. Part on some great TV shows.
Oh, American Housewife, I did a couple times. Yeah. Thank you, Susan. You're sweet. It's all at jmore.com. Excerpts from the poetry book are there. My podcasts are there. Excerpts from my self help book, Get Your Gazelle, are there. It's all.
Is there wrestling footage there of the weigh ins?
I have that's on my phone. I'll show you in my car, but let it get dark first.
And whether you're offended or not by Jay today, go see his comedy.
Always. And laugh, and then just don't tell anybody you laughed at.
No.
If you are offended at what I said, I would love for you to email me at morestories3737@gmail.com and explain to me why you are actually offended. Like St. Francis of Assisi, help me understand and be understood. I want to understand your brain, and I'm not. lying.
That's how we should all be interested in changing our
own. That's just
the
buffer between go fuck yourself. Right?
That's really a, you have to, like, make the effort. That was the nicest.
We're really glad you came, and you can come back anytime.
Yes. I love it. I'm so happy around you guys.
I know it's a very comfortable couch.
Yeah, now that I've settled into this is like my position
we're
here.
Trying to get you out. I'll put a catheter in if you need. But,
Jesus.
How about that cath on the go? You ever see those commercials?
That would get some Facebook likes.
Is that an impulse buy? Catheter?
They have to do it themselves.
Like, oh, maybe that's why I pee blood and vomit.
No, they have to. They know they're doing catheters. If
oh, God.
You hear Wag's story about a catheter?
Oh, that was in the Louis C.K.
catheter
thing.
Catheter thing?
He's playing in Eastern Long Island. He goes by a pharmacy, and there's a wheelchair in the window. Like, maybe I need one of those. So I'm not crawling around on the sidewalk like I'm falling off a cliff all the time. Not an impulse purchase. Like, maybe, for my paralysis. Yes. Maybe I could use one of those. Too soon?
He is so good.
Anytime
yes, he is.
Louis C.K. wants to come on this podcast, too. We'll have him.
Yeah, Louis, do this podcast. You listen to me all the time, right? As your advisor, I guess.
All right, thanks, guys, very much.
And I love
Peace
you very
out.
Much.
We'll
see you. All right, that's about it for this episode of This Life. Check us out at KBC 790 Midday Live Talk Radio. Monday to Friday, you can also tune in every day live via the magic of the internet at kbc.com. If you miss it, we've made it simple for you to find all the shows at drdrew.com, the Adam and Dr. Drew podcast, the Zinc What I Do By Myself, Dr. Drew podcast, This Life, of course, with Bob Swole Patrol, Mike Cantho, and his new health and fitness podcast. You can find us on Twitter at This Life Podcast, at Dr. Drew, D-R-E-W, at Rehab Bob Forrest, and of course, our lovely producer at First Lady of Love. I think I know who that is. If you love this show, please subscribe and tell a friend. We appreciate it when you do. We'd love to hear your feedback as well. Send us a message. Join the email list at drdrew.com, drdrew.com/contact. Also get a weekly email from us on that. While you're at it, at doctor.com, please support our sponsors by clicking through the banners. We only advertise products that I can get behind. So thank you for supporting them, those that support us. And thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.